place, watch me steal the show. Higher ground, yeah, I'm rising fast. This is my moment, it's built to last. Keep the focus, keep the drive.
Hello everyone, and welcome to the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant Show. I'm your host, Rebecca Whitman, helping you go from burned out to balanced, beautiful, and abundant. Today, we have a very special guest in our studio. Welcome to the show, Reagan Carruthers.
Well, hi, I'm happy to be here.
So great to have you and see you again. I know we talked a few months ago, and I'm so excited to dive into your story. It's so powerful. It's going to help so many people. But first, let me tell my audience about your background. So Reagan is a spiritual teacher, a life coach, and a founder of Aset Yoga Center. Her philosophy begins with the Kriya Yoga mantra, I am not my body, I am not even my mind. She helps her clients release their egoic attachments and connect with their true selves. Her unique journey blends practical wisdom with deep spiritual insights. Her teachings are rooted in her overcoming trauma, embracing her gifts, and being authentic. So let's get into your story. I know it's a very powerful story. How did you go from being a Silicon exec to spiritual teacher?
Yeah, it's really more about returning. In that at the age of 3, I began my education and we meditated every day and we did E for gym and graphed our energy with Carillion film and began the day in devotion to God. So,
your parents, were they hippies or just very spiritually evolved? Because a lot of people were not meditating in those days.
My mother certainly was. My father was characterized in his obituary as the greatest legal mind of the 20th century in St. Louis. So he valued his mind. He always used to kid him that he treated his body as if it was just something to carry around his head. But my mother was an unusual person for certain. And it was she that insisted to my father that that was the school where I attended. And, you know, I learned algebra and read Shakespeare and learned Latin and French. So it wasn't just this Eric teaching. It was really just a beautiful, beautiful place. And so when my economic circumstances changed, part of that was because of my time in the Valley. And part of it was I fell in love with a wonderful man who wanted to take care of me. And that was new. So when that change happened,
bring us back. Like, how old are you now in your story, Reagan?
What?
You're cutting out a little bit. Just go back to, I heard when you grew up, you were taught meditation and everything in school. So take us through, like, how did you meet this man who took care of you and where were you in your life?
I used to work for him. He was a former boss I had. Teaching industry, religion, that's when I met him. He was my VP. And then years later, in 2000, when I left HeartMath as the staff there and returned to corporate work, he was directly my boss. And I didn't know him very well, and I didn't actually even like him very much. But years later, when I was working at an early stage startup in Silicon Valley, he was my point of contact to get content for my startup, president of McGraw-Hill. So, that's how it happened. We had dinner in New York and we've been together ever since.
And he's still your husband to this day?
Oh yeah, very much. Very much so.
How many years have you guys been married?
It's going to be 10 in September.
Wow. Well, let's get into the you almost died, that part of your story, the traumatic part that is the impetus for writing your book, Tragic Magic. Tell us about that part of your story.
Oh, certainly. So I was working on my book, living in Santa Cruz, California, where I had lived most of my adult life. And I had traveled to Joshua Tree to write. We were still in the COVID lockdowns. California was quite dystopian in how they chose to approach all of that. And I just needed time away. And so when I write, I had a, you know, specific ritual, prayer, meditation to kind of get me equipped to write. And on this fateful day in Joshua Tree, this trusted voice in my heart said, "You must urgently move home." And so I did. I moved from Santa Cruz back to Missouri in a matter of months because I knew the truth of that voice. And that is the voice that guides me, the voice of God, frankly. And so I got here. That's a beautiful story in and of itself. Got here, found my 10-acre estate, knew it was right. And I'm teaching yoga on my back lawn while I'm getting this big garage remodeled. And again, in meditation, I'm told you must urgently go to a doctor. So urgent was in both directives. So I went to the doctor the next day because I live in a small town. You can do that.
Yeah.
And that's what so I had a birth defect in my heart and it required emergency open heart surgery to replace my aortic valve. And
you were like on the verge, you were literally on the verge of having a heart attack and dying. And had you not gone to the doctor, the heart attack would have happened or what?
Not a heart attack. It was a severe calcification of my aortic valve. So I had to have my aortic valve placed, and Barnes Hospital in St. Louis, where I was born, just happens to be one of the best places in the world for the surgery I needed, which is why God wanted me back. And then just 4 days later, after having this intense surgery, my surgeon comes to see me because it's my day of discharge, just 4 days after getting cut in half and getting a valve replaced. And there was no medical explanation of alive. So typically you have about this much room, $0.50 for blood to flow through your aortic valve. And mine was less than the diameter of a toothpick. And I just knew that it was my spiritual practice that had kept me alive. I mean, it was certainly my spiritual practice that got me to open heart surgery, right? But the actual practice, I'll just know. I'm still here.
That's an amazing story because that still small voice, which I choose to call, you know, God or your higher power, the universe, whatever, you know, I don't know what you call it, your higher self, your angel, but that voice, well, what do you call that still small voice that was communicating to you?
It's the voice of God. That's divine guidance.
Yes. The voice of God was telling you first to leave California and move back home to the Midwest. And then once you got there, the voice told you to get into the doctor right away. And it is beautiful that you listen to that voice. But I feel like a lot of people who are listening to this podcast, they're not as well practiced as you are to tune into that still small voice. So do you have any advice to the people who are like, wow, that's an amazing story, Reagan. I want to make sure that I'm in touch with, you know, my higher power so I can communicate. Do you have any great tips for accessing that voice, yoga, meditation, breath work, anything that you could tell the people listening?
Yeah, all of it. You know, it would be trying to have a conversation at a party in a really noisy room, right? Mm-hmm. You can't. And so if your room is with chaotic noise, if you don't know how to cultivate quiet, mm-hmm. hard to hear. Mm-hmm. And then most importantly, learning how to truly connect and access the energy of God, the love of God, and bring that energy into your system.
What meditation technique would you recommend for a novice?
For a novice? Well, I would begin just closing your eyes, sitting tall, and just notice your breath. Start there. And in so doing, you will immediately become more aware of how busy your mind is, how much noise, all the unconscious running, right? Just a simple seeing the breath can bring you more aware of how much is going on up there. So that is one simple technique. And then another technique that I think is incredibly accessible is reflect on something that's happened in your past where you felt profound love or deep gratitude.
Beautiful.
Reflect on that moment and re-experience of it. Closed. Ideally directing the breath through the center of the chest, through the heart. So it's, you know, two processes. It's partly the breath focus, but the most important part is the energy of that moment, the energy of love, the energy of gratitude, and consciously feel it. And try to sit for 20 minutes feeling it.
The reason why you want us to go back to a moment in life where we felt connected and happy and we felt love is that will help our body remember that moment, and then we'll physiologically go back to that feeling. And that is the goal of meditation, to connect with divine love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so think of it like scaffolding, right? Maybe you don't know what the energy of the love of God feels like, right? I mean, many people may be like, I don't know what that is. Well, think of it kind of like a ladder. Start just feeling consciously love and gratitude, and sit in that feeling for as long as you can. That then physiologically, energetically changes you. It changes you biochemically too. It also creates a coherent signal through the vagus nerve from the heart to the brain. And there's lots of benefits of doing that. And as you practice that, because none of this happens in the absence of discipline, and that's the unpopular message, like none of it works in the absence of discipline.
What does that mean? You have to have a regular meditation practice for it to work?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that in one meditation where you're connecting to a feeling of love, I mean, beautiful things happen just that one time. Mm-hmm. But if you really want to be led by the God that is, right, your divinity, just like anything, you would pick up a violin and expect to play it.
Right. It's a practice.
So why would anyone think that they can learn how to hang out in the love of God in the absence of a practice?
Yeah. So do you have any tips for making it part of a regular practice for people who think they're too busy to meditate?
If you feel you're too busy to meditate, you really need to meditate.
That's right. Because that means you're like have such a busy mind and energy field.
Yeah. So create a beautiful space in your home. It doesn't have to be a big space. Maybe it's just a beautiful decorative pillow to sit on and a gorgeous candle and some fresh flowers and maybe photos of your loved ones or nature or, you know, whatever. So that when you walk by that space inside your house, it signals to you what that is. And hey, sit down. And, you know, again, you have to begin. And so maybe you're beginning and you've created this pretty space and you can only do it for 5 minutes. Okay, well, that's better than not.
Bob Proctor says 5 minutes a day of meditation, if that's all you can do, will change your life.
Well, I can't say that. I don't know if
What's
that's
your
true.
Minimum amount of time that you think it would take to change your life with a meditation practice?
At least 20 minutes in the morning and 20 minutes at night.
Wow. So you think 40 minutes is what is required to change your life?
Not required. I don't, unlike a spiritual teacher's aim that if you do X, Y, and Z, X happens. I'm not that kind of teacher.
Linear.
I have no way of knowing.
Right.
But what I will say, the longer you spend time consciously connecting to the energy of love, the healthier you will be. And frankly, the smarter. It actually facilitates access to the cortex. You'll be less stressed and you may experience a breakthrough. But I can't claim to know how much time. For some people, it might take all day.
Yeah. Wow. Well, we are going to come back after a quick commercial break. We're going to talk about how you overcame your childhood trauma and how we can all go back and heal our childhood trauma, because sometimes we have some limiting beliefs that we don't even know are running our lives. So thank you so much, everyone, for watching the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant Show, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant Show. We are talking with author, spiritual teacher, Reagan Carruthers. So Reagan, how did you heal your childhood trauma?
Through my practice. So my inner life change, I share, you know, with people that are ready. I basically went back in time about how I did it. And here's the essence of it. Your wounding, things you've experienced from birth to now, the traumas, the betrayals, the abuse, whatever it is, because we all have trauma. There's not a single person that doesn't. Different acts of yourself were created because of those wounds. Mm-hmm. And what I have people do and what I did myself was unpack and be radically honest about what did I experience birth to 9 to 14, 14 to 18, etc. Write it all out, get real honest about what you experienced, and then begin to be curious about, okay, then, and to believe about myself or the larger world, right? Get acquainted with what this part of you believes, because we all try to deal with our traumas mostly by unhealthy mechanisms. So you do that unpacking.
I think that's a good distinction, because you might have a belief that you can't trust anybody or people, everybody's out to get you. But that is like, well, where did that come from? Like, who was the first person who betrayed you? And that belief of you can't trust anyone, that was a defense mechanism against that one person, you know, at a young age, could be age 0 to 9. And now you've projected that onto every human on planet Earth. So I think it's really a great question that you just suggested. We ask ourselves, like, what did that trauma choose? You know, how did we choose to, conceptualize that? And what did that narrative, how did our narrative shift after that trauma?
Yeah. So get acquainted with all these aspects of self and then bring loving witness to them. So going back to what I was explaining before, connect to the energy of love and bring that energy, in my case, to that traumatized little girl whose mother tried to kill herself in front of her at the age of 2, right? That little girl needs to feel loved and seen and safe. So the only way she can feel that is if I bring that to her. And I'm not trying to fix her. I'm not trying to change her. I'm just trying to hold loving witness to what she has known. Mm. So that is part of the process. And then by spending time reflective emotional memories and feelings again, right, you begin to change the composition of the amygdala. So your amygdala in your brain holds all of your traumatic memories, and it's always looking for matches to keep you safe, right? The analogy would be, there's a new guy at work, you hate him right out of the gate because he looks like a bully from grade school, right? That's the amygdala. Mm-hmm. So when you reflect on these positive memories, you feel them, that gets put in the amygdala too. So over time, you do that enough, a year from now, the composition of the amygdala is different because it doesn't know the difference between something you're recalling and something you're experiencing directly. So it's a bit of a biohack to begin to change the ratio of memory held in the amygdala, therefore changing how you're responding to this work.
Yeah, that's great advice. So speaking of biohacking in Silicon Valley and like pressure that everybody feels in Silicon Valley to like live forever or look awesome or be super rich, how did you personally break through the social pressure to leave Silicon Valley and buy a ranch in the Midwest and do your own thing?
I never felt that pressure. I mean, even though I worked in Silicon Valley because I had to, frankly, I divorced my husband after 24 years. I mean, I had to go it alone. But the values of the place were never mine. I was never attached to any of it. And I frankly saw the bullshit so clearly. And so when I was guided, you know, later in Joshua Tree to move, I know that voice. I was still, as an executive in Silicon Valley, I still had a practice. I wasn't nearly as disciplined as I am now. But, you know, I was staff at the HeartMath Institute in the 90s, became an executive in Silicon Valley in the early 2000s. So it wasn't, you know, it wasn't as if I was needing my Prada purse and, you know, that just was never me. It was an end at a complicated time. It was what I needed to do or what I felt I needed to do to support my kids because my ex-husband didn't have the means to help me or them. Yeah. And so as soon as I could, I got out of there.
Well, we have that in common. I think we talked about that in our first conversation because I was in LA for 24 years and I moved home to the Midwest to live in Cincinnati and you moved home to live in St. Louis. Now, did your husband come with you?
My current husband or my ex-husband?
Your current husband.
Oh, it's my Yeah. I mean,
what did he think about your idea to move back home?
He said, I'm not getting in the way of you and God. I don't care where I am. I just want to be with you. I literally came out of meditation in Joshua Tree. I checked my phone to see if I had enough bars to make a phone. The first person was a real estate agent, a friend in St. Louis. And then the second call I made was to my husband, who then quickly got Southwest points all arranged so that I could fly out of Palm Springs and go to St. Louis the next day, which is what I did. So he was remarkable in his unconditional love. And he now knows, had he, you know, resisted, or I would have been dead pretty quick. I mean, I was in Santa Cruz. You don't want to go to Dominican Hospital for open heart surgery. You don't even want to go there for a sprained ankle. So anyway, he was a beautiful partner and love to make all this work.
And is he retired or can he do his job from St. Louis?
He's been in retirement training now for like 2 years. I won't get it, but he's working for contract for the company where he was an executive for a long time. So I don't know how many hours a week he's working, but he's semi-retired and probably in 2 months will be retired, but he thought that before and then people come and want him to do things. So we'll see. Not sure.
I thought I was going to be semi-retired too. And I get pulled into like all these different businesses and projects because I like it. I like talking to people and I like business. So I was in your husband's scenario. I was told by my husband, he said, I think we should move to Cincinnati. And I'm like, you're crazy. I'm not moving back there. I spent my whole first quarter of my life in Cincinnati trying to get out so I could live in LA and pursue my Hollywood dream. And now you're telling me we're going back. He's like, he had that intuitive voice say, yes, we are supposed to go back to Cincinnati. And now that I'm in this new life, it's been 5 months. I'm happy. Like, we have a big, beautiful house and it's a slower life and I'm meeting great people. And I'm so grateful that I allowed him to lead me home, because I didn't have resistance to it, because I trust him so much, and your husband loved and trusted you. So it's just so beautiful. Let's talk about being overwhelmed. A lot of people in this era that we're in are overwhelmed with the pings and the dings and all the craziness that's happening in the world. They're disconnected. There's an epidemic of loneliness. Suicide rates are up. What is your advice on how people can deal with this feeling of disconnection or overwhelm?
Have a different relationship with technology. And don't watch TV.
Mm-hmm.
Get outside. Spend time in nature. Because if you judge the world based on your daily interactions in your community, you have a much different point of view about what this world is, contrasted with the shit on the phone or on the TV. And by the way, it's all designed to keep you afraid.
It's all designed to what?
To keep you afraid.
Mm-hmm. To keep you in fear. Yeah, I agree.
And the actual frequency, you know, everything's frequency, everything's energy. The actual frequency that comes out of your television is apathy.
Hmm.
So, yeah, disconnect, spend more time in nature, do more of the things that you love. Practice. Like, I don't know how anybody functions in the craziness that is modern day without a practice. I mean, no wonder they're suffering so.
Makes and perfect sense. When you say a practice, you're referring to a meditation practice.
Yeah, or volunteer in your community, you know? Some of the fast tracks to joy are being of service, mm-hmm. feeling gratitude. So begin maybe with just a gratitude practice.
I totally agree. I feel like gratitude is the secret sauce to a happy life, and you can't be overwhelmed and grateful at the same time, or maybe you can. What are your thoughts on that?
No, you can't.
Okay.
Again, everything you choose, as much as you think you're not in choice, every thought and feeling you have, you're choosing.
I'm going to repeat that because your internet cut out. Every thought, she said, every thought and feeling you have, you are absolutely choosing. Mm-hmm. So when somebody is choosing overwhelm, what can they tell themselves to shift out of that?
I'm overwhelmed. I'm now going to make a different choice. Mm. I'm going to feel gratitude right instead of overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. Something always that we can feel grateful for. Even like your favorite ice cream flavor, right? It doesn't have to be complicated. Anything that just gets you out of your conditioned mind.
Mm-hmm.
Because newsflash, it is conditioned. You are programmed. And you can create a different program, but
and
it takes
the program is fear.
Absolutely.
Because when people are fearful, they're easier to manipulate.
Yeah. I mean, I absolutely. It's all by design. You know, we're all divided politically, whatever. Like, it's all by design. It's what the people that have the true power, which aren't necessarily people we elect. Again, another news flash. I don't even think, you know, I don't think the president of the states runs anything. Anyway, that's a whole other podcast.
But non-political.
But you need to choose. You need to decide who do you want to be.
Who do you want to be and how do you want to feel? And I think it's normal to get derailed, because that's the human condition, is to have, you know, moments of fear, doubt, and worry. So you're saying when we get derailed, to get into gratitude, to get into service. How can we be of service? Who can we help? what can we feel grateful for right here, right now?
Yep.
Great. Well, we are going to cut to a quick commercial break. When we come back, we are going to talk about your book, Tragic Magic, and the core message of it. Thank you, everyone, for listening to the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant podcast. I will be right back. Hello, everyone, and welcome back. I'm your host, Rebecca Whitman, taking you from burned out and overwhelmed to balanced, beautiful, and abundant. We are talking to Regan Carruthers about her book, Tragic Magic. So what is the core message of your book and why should we go get it?
I think the core message is one of hope, that you can heal and you can create the conditions for the miraculous. I know that directly. And so that's why I wanted to share my story, to inspire you, to nudge you around having a practice, a spiritual practice, and to know that you can do it. When you read my book and the messiness of it and the trauma that I knew as the trauma that I learned about through miraculous means, if I can heal, you can too.
Did your mom die of natural causes or did she commit suicide? Just curious.
No, she died exactly how she said she was going to die. She was a clairvoyant and she said, you know, honey, I'm going to die taking a nap. She always said that my whole life. And I'm like, well, that sounds great for you and shitty for me because it doesn't sound like there's a heads up. It doesn't sound like there's a goodbye. It sounds quite sudden. And sure enough, in 2011, I was hosting a party for my husband's 50th birthday. And about an hour before the party was to start, the phone rang. And I knew something was wrong. I could feel it. I didn't know what it was, but I'm like, whatever's on the other end of that phone, it's not good. And it was my stepdad letting me know that he had just gone to wake my mother up from a nap. And she was gone. And the reason she chose then, and I know she chose it because that was the kind of mastery, frankly, she had. My entire support system was walking through my front door an hour after I got that call.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So she chose a moment where she knew you would be held and loved by your community. And how old was she?
She was 78.
Mm. So I know you mentioned the trauma of watching your mom attempt suicide when you were two, which I'm so sorry. That is awful. If you would tell us what other trauma have you overcome and how has that created magic in your life?
Yeah. So my mother was also quote unquote mentally ill. Never bought in diagnosis, but diagnosed herself in 1961. As a manic depressive. Mm-hmm. She just had so much power and connection running through her. She didn't know how to manage it and she lacked discipline. So she would make really bad decisions from that dysregulated place. And one of the decisions she made was partnering with a man she met in the mental hospital when I was 3 years old. That's not a great, you know, to meet your next husband.
That's not a good dating pool.
And he was very abusive emotionally and he was violent. And my father, my biological father, who I later became quite close with, I only saw on Sundays for lunch. So he left me to deal with my mentally ill mother, my mentally ill father, didn't protect me. So that's the essence of the trauma. You can read more about it in the book in terms of what those individuals, the choices they made and how that impacted me.
Yeah. I'm so sorry that you were abused that way. But now there's...
I'm not sorry at all.
That's the whole premise of the book. So what is the magic in it?
The magic is being divinely led.
So do you think without that traumatic childhood, you would not have come to be divinely led like you are?
No, I don't think so. I mean, maybe, but what I learned how to do, particularly after my dramatic spiritual awakening in my 20s, due to circumstances that I describe in the book, I learned actually how to radiate divine love to Darkji. So a lot of that was going on in my home when I was a little girl. I would see, you know, demonic entities and all this stuff. And again, I don't want to give too much away. It's in the book. But what I ultimately learned how to do was to be able to face dark energy. So face your trauma, face it, and be able to unconditionally love it. And in after my awakening, the only person I could reach was my stepdad. And I just was holding this love of God, this unconditionality, this complete forgiveness. And that was over 30 years ago. And he's still a changed man. So he went from being a violent, emotionally abusive person to grateful and kind. And the energy I held and my love of him changed him.
Wow, that is so beautiful. Does he realize that that's what shifted him, or does he not know why he shifted?
Oh, he knows. And a golden eagle landed on our crabapple tree in the backyard when I was talking with him on the phone, because my awakening had happened in San Francisco and he's in St. Louis. And then a moment later, after the eagle appears, a red fox appears at the base of the tree looking up at the eagle. He's Comanche. Mm-hmm. A part of his lineage. The eagle in the indigenous tradition is the closest to God. It's divine. It's a divine symbol. And the red fox represents a noble messenger. So he knows what happened.
I love it. So what unconscious beliefs are sponsoring our suffering? What does that mean? Unconscious beliefs sponsoring our suffering.
Well, going back to what we were talking about before, right? All of your wounded parts of you, right? These different selves that live inside of you have different beliefs, right? And if you're not conscious of that, right? It's your wounding that has you continuing to suffer.
Mm-hmm.
So as long as that remains unconscious, you know, people think that when they get emotionally triggered, it's about the person or what they said or whatever. No, it's a call from your unhealed self, because somebody else could be experiencing the same thing and have a completely different reaction.
Exactly.
So you have to know that when you are responding that way, it's what remains unhealed within you that is acting out.
Yeah, they say if you're hysterical, it's historical, meaning there's nothing happening right now that would create hysteria. It's something from your past that is being projected into your now.
I love that. I've never heard that before. Oh my God, that should be a bumper sticker on my car. I love that.
You can steal that. I will give you that. If you're hysterical, it's historical.
Oh my God. I love that so much. Definitely. I mean, later today to shoot a bunch of videos for Instagram. And I might actually have a video that begins
just
with that.
Tag me at Rebecca E. Whitman so I can say this came up during our podcast.
Yes, absolutely. Be happy to do that.
So this is a show about overcoming burnout to have a balanced life in 7 key areas. I call them my 7 pillars of abundance. They are spirituality, fitness, emotions, romance, mindset, social, and financial. So you say that finding your life purpose helps with burnout. How does that finding your purpose help with burnout?
Because you're aligned. So many people are doing work either because they feel they have to, or they have no other choice, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yet, they don't like the color. They may not even like or believe in the product or service that their company is representing, right? So it begins with just this inquiry, right? About why do you think you're here? Mm-hmm. Like for me, one of the big cues of that was to go back in time, think of myself as a little girl, right? And at 8 years old, I was a teacher designing curriculum, and little Paxton Kelly, who was 5, used to come to my house for school.
Right? So that was your divine purpose. At age 5, you were teaching. That's great.
And then later in grade school, I had like a private social club. Almost think of it like a temple. And I was like the high priestess of the temple. And people would have to interview with me. And we had like a secret language and these, you know, practices that we would do together. Like, who does that at age 9? Anyway, so I would want your listeners to really think back, you know, like when you had a dream when you were a little kid. Like my ex-husband, when he was a little boy, he wanted to be a park ranger. He loves the outdoors. I think if he had chosen that instead of being a certified financial planner, he would have been a lot happier. So, yeah, I think that's why we burn out. And we burn out because we don't take care of ourselves. So even if you're doing something, let's say you're a nurse, and I mean, you're a nurse because you want to help heal people, right? But because of your schedule, you're eating junk food during the day, or God forbid, the food that's in the hospital cafeteria, right? You don't spend any time exercising.
Isn't that ironic that the doctors and the nurses are fed the most unhealthy food in the hospital? The people that are supposed to be taking care of us and healing us are getting junk food. I noticed that.
Yeah. Yeah. So we have to really be honest about what are we taking in?
Mm-hmm.
And that's not just the food, right? What are we consuming in terms of content? Like people that watch scary things on TV. Like, why is that? Like your nervous system then is incoherent and you're scared. Like, why would you do that? I mean, as an example, right? So the content you consume, the food that you eat, how you take care of your body, is what you do on a day aligned with your values, right? I mean, it's a lot to unpack, and I understand that that can feel overwhelming to your listeners. So just begin in one category, right? Like, start improving what you eat. There's so many different supplements and quick nutritional hacks that you can invest in. I believe in Juice Plus, and so I share that, but there's so many others. So start eating better, eat organic food, don't eat processed food. If it's advertised on television, don't consume it.
That's just good advice. I have a funny story, and I hope she's not listening to this podcast, but I used to get lash extensions, and I went to this woman who liked to listen to true crime podcasts while she was doing lashes. I left, yes, I had beautiful lash extensions, but I was so scared. I was like, oh my God, like who's in the bushes? Who's coming around the corner? Like, oh. I can't get my lashes done with her anymore because I don't ever want to listen to a true crime podcast again.
Right.
Why would I want to scare myself? Like, you know, if you do like to scare yourself and you're listening to the show, at least you're listening to this show to put in some positive energy in your life while you're scaring yourself with the other podcasts. But yes, be as careful with what goes into your mind and your body as you are, you know, be very intentional is what you're saying.
Yeah. And don't watch the news.
Yeah, the news is very scary.
I mean, the news could be reporting on other things, right? People acting courageously and selflessly and moments of, you know, divine intervention, right? But instead, they talk about what they talk about so that you stay scared and overwhelmed and obedient.
Yes. If it bleeds, it leads. And I understand if you want to be up to date on current events, because there's a lot of history happening right now, but you can just get your headlines on the internet and glance through them without the music and the drama and the sensationalism of the news.
Well, this might be controversial. I think most of what's reported on isn't even the truth. So,
yeah. We'll save that for a political podcast. So, how can people get your book and how can people stay in touch with you?
Yeah, so you can buy Tragic Magic on Amazon or Barnes & Noble, either as a paperback or an ebook. So that's one way to get to know me. You can follow me on social. So I tend to post inspirational videos most every day on Instagram. And you can go on ReaganCarruthers.com for more inspirational content. And if you'd like, you know, to work with me, if you're ready to develop a spiritual practice that you can stick with, then I'd be happy to be your inner life coach. And so you can read about that on my website. You can schedule a free discovery call with me. And we just explore what your goals are. And I tell you how I go about it. And we feel into the resonance. And if there's resonance, we begin.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much, Reagan, for being my guest. And thank you, listeners, for being a part of this movement, because you can achieve happiness and success through alignment, not the hustle and grind. And until we meet again, keep your vibe high and magnetize. Bye, everyone.